This is a podcast about the hardcore community.
Made by and for those who live authentic lives and embrace hard truths.
We archive the stories of the bands and people who make this lifestyle possible. I'm Josh Lyon.
And I'm Greg Benoit.
And this is the Hardcore Archive Podcast. All right, welcome to another episode of the Hardcore Archive Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lyons. Greg Benoit is not with us tonight, but he'll be on the next episode. As I was talking to with my guests right before I hit record, we're trying something a little new tonight. I've had one kind of rap hip hop interview, I guess, before with our mutual friend, Benny Beyond. So we'll see how this goes. But yeah, this is a Hardcore Archive Podcast. Real quick before we jump into the interview, I just want to say July 29th at the Bug Jar, I'm doing a show with Pure Heel, Sawchuck, Frenzy, Only Shallow, and World Purge. I'm doing that one off the top of my head. July 29th, 8 p.m. at the Bug Jar, $12. If you're from Rochester, hope to see you guys there. And I have a side podcast now, too, called Spreading the Hardcore Reality, which is all new music. If you guys haven't heard about it yet, I'll tell you more about it on the next episode, I guess. So like I said, we're talking to Moses Rockwell tonight, a local rapper. And like I said, this is kind of like our first time really doing something like this. So hopefully there'll be some interest in doing some more of these in the future. But how's everything going for you tonight, Moses?
Things are great, man. How are you?
Good, good, good. Like I told you before, I was kind of running around trying to get things ready with the kids and, you know, trying to sneak a couple tacos in before I hit record too. So, you know how it is.
Yeah, that's the perfect podcast snack.
Yeah, and for any, well, I guess we probably won't do the video on this one, but I am drinking my Dr. Pepper, which is my drink of choice. So we're in a perfect setting, I guess, right now. So like I told you before, and I know most of our listeners are probably familiar too, because I've sprinkled a little bit of hip hop and rap interest on the podcast before. But we usually interview more like hardcore and punk musicians. But I had mentioned to Benny probably a month or two ago that I want to start kind of going more in this direction too. And he suggested interviewing you. So I thought that'd be a pretty good start. So I think what we'll do kind of before we talk about like what you're doing now and whatnot is maybe kind of just give us a little background, like kind of how you got into like music and kind of like what led you to like hip hop and rap, I guess.
Yeah, sure. I don't know, man. I think rap was just kind of everywhere when I was a little kid. It's kind of unavoidable. It was in every cartoon and every movie. It seemed like everyone my age was like rapping. So I don't know. It just seemed inevitable for me, I guess. Did seem inevitable to be still doing it in my 30s, but yeah, I probably started writing songs when I was like 9 or 10. And started recording them a couple years after that. And then probably playing live shows when I was like 17, 18.
Okay. So I just want to check, because I think we're probably about the same age. You said you started doing stuff when you were like 9 or 10. I'm like a child from the 80s. Like I was born in 81. Are we around the same age range or?
I was born in 89.
Okay, so a few years difference. Okay, so mm-hmm. When you're talking about it being on the radio and everywhere in like commercials and cartoons and stuff, this is like the late 90s, I'm guessing then?
Early 90s, yeah.
Early 90s, okay, so even as like, even from like infancy, you remember like hearing all like the, I guess what we call like the golden age or golden era, like hip hop stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And the clothes too, you know, even like ties had those like weird tribal prints on them.
Yeah. Yeah, cause I grew up like in the early 90s and obviously like I'm a huge fan of hardcore and punk, but before that I would say from like 91 to like 94, 95, it was all like the hip hop and rap that was more like the commercial, like popular stuff at the time. I mean, I found more like underground stuff as I became like an adult and stuff. But I hear a lot, I obviously hear a lot of 90s and early 2000s influence in your music, as we'll get to. I guess I'm not too surprised to hear you come from, you know, listening to the same era, you know, even if it's a couple of years, like age difference, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was always a little bit late, maybe a decade late. Everything I got into was like a decade stale by the time I made my way to it.
You know, and what's crazy is I've always kind of felt like I was like a little bit like ahead of where I am, because like I'm 40 now and like I feel like podcasting like blew up when I was like in my mid 30s. And I've always been like, I wish I was like 21 or 25 when all this tech stuff was really, you know, because I didn't really grasp the social media stuff until more recently. Like, I always thought that was just kind of like a dumb thing for like teenagers, you know? And now I kind of see it more as like a tool to like use as promotion and stuff, you know? But with like, with what I get what you're saying too, though, because like a lot of times, you know, you wish you would have like come up in a different era. Like with us for like hardcore and punk, and me being born in 81, like a lot of the classic bands that we all respect and look up to were like, you know, active bands when I was like wearing diapers, basically, you know what I mean? So
Yeah, you wouldn't have been allowed in those shows.
No. And that's an aspect now that we're dealing with too. And I don't know how it is for you with like playing shows, as we'll get to, but like with hardcore and punk, it's like a big all ages thing. And as you know, like Rochester doesn't really have much for all ages right now, unless you want to do like some real alternative venues, you know? Sure. So like, if you're trying to do like a club show, it's like 18 or 21 plus. And like for hardcore, it's like, I'm starting, like, as I said in the intro, I'm starting to book more shows again now. And I'm like trying to like think of places to where I don't have to like lug the whole entire like sound equipment in the trunk of a car. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And I guess that's a con of like alternative venues, is that you have to provide everything.
Exactly. Everything else is cool about them because it's like cheaper and like you can kind of run the show you want. And like, obviously with clubs, like I know like hip hop and hardcore are similar there, where it's like the clubs don't really get it quite as much. And especially like in a security standpoint sometimes, you know what I mean? So we prefer to do things DIY when possible, but it's just having kids and such, it becomes a little trickier to try to do all that, you know?
Absolutely.
So, but I guess kind of sticking with like you talking about writing like songs and stuff, were you already like trying to rap when you were like 9 years old, basically then?
Yeah. Those were my first raps. Probably the fourth, fifth grade during that time.
Do you have anything like saved from like early recordings or anything?
I mean, I was doing a lot of stuff on cassette tapes. I'm sure they exist somewhere, but I'm definitely not dying to hear them.
Yeah, I was in a really shitty punk band in like the mid 90s when I was in high school. And in the last couple of years, I realized that somebody put out like a cassette compilation of Rochester hardcore and punk bands, like spanning like 15 or 20 years. And I was like, I don't even know how this dude came up with our recording in the first place, or like, or why we ended up on there, but same as you, I'm not really looking to get a copy of it or anything. So if anybody listening has that, do not post it on any digital things or anything.
Hopefully you've gone through like different aliases between now and then, and it wouldn't be able to be traced back to you.
Yeah. I was using a really weird nickname. I don't even, you know, that's not worth getting into here, obviously. But so I guess kind of sticking with that, though, like if you started like writing and stuff at a very young age, like at what point did you kind of start thinking about this as more like something you could take, I guess, a little bit more seriously, and like as you were saying, like start playing more shows?
You know, I kind of regret admitting it, but I think it was MySpace, because that was like a really kind of like a music central social media, at least for me, you know. And I don't know, I didn't really know. I grew up in Chi-Lai, New York. Not a lot of people super pumped on rap in my high school, you know. And then all of a sudden I had access to like everyone else in surrounding towns that were like doing the same thing I was doing. And they were like very, you know, I got a lot of props on there, which I was really surprised. Like, you don't even know, if you're not part of any community, it's hard to know if you're like even good, you know. And everyone I met was super cool. And I actually didn't even have to like go through a open mic circuit. Like, I went right into showcasing based on other artists I was communicating with on MySpace.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that, because I was mentioning earlier about not like grasping the whole way of like promoting and stuff on social media early on. And that, and like, I was around for the early MySpace days because I was like still booking hardcore shows and stuff. And like, I know some people ended up like literally like making careers out of like that, all that stuff, like with the networking and stuff. And like, they would tour with bands and it just like leapfrogged into other endeavors. And I'm just like, I thought the whole thing was just kind of cheesy at the time. Like, just like, again, like I said, I thought it was just like teenagers like posting pictures and stuff. And I didn't realize there was like all this other stuff to it, where you could like you're saying, like promote music and connect with people. And like, when I listen to like interviews, even now with like, like more popular, like rappers that are like between my age and your age, like they talk about that too, like posting stuff on MySpace and connecting with people. And it's just crazy to the technology. You just have to be able to understand things. And I've admitted on this podcast a few times that sometimes I'm a little bit slow in grasping a lot of those concepts.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think people benefit greatly from avoiding them, but you know, yeah, a lot of good can come out of it if you're careful and responsible.
Yeah, it's weird because like I post and look at stuff on Instagram for the podcast, for my enterprise hardcore stuff, but like for Twitter and Facebook, I literally just post the stuff and try not to look at it at all, because like every time I go on Twitter, just making the one post, like random shit is just in the feed, and I'm like, this is a total shit show here now. Like after that dude bought it and like just let everybody run wild, I'm like, I don't even want to post like my podcast down there, but I know that like there's still people out there that see that, you know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, social media is, if not used properly, I feel like it's a real, you know, it's a real nasty thing, as we've learned in the last several years.
It's a total hellscape if you're just unconsciously scrolling, you know. I don't think it's very good for your brain.
So like I said, what I get from listening to your music, especially with like some of the other artists that are on your tracks, is like a real late 90s, early 2000s, like underground hip hop type vibe. Did you kind of have a direction that you were going for like early on, or did it take you a little bit of time to develop all that, I guess?
It probably took some time. I do remember like way back just liking rap in general, not really understanding that there were like different pockets and subgenres, and that it was kind of a divisive thing, you know. Like I really liked, when I was super young, you know, I really liked like the Hot Boys and Cash Money stuff, but then I also, you know, was kind of pumped on like the Roots and Common and stuff like that. Didn't really realize that like most of the rap world kind of like put their nose up at either side of that spectrum, you know. And then once that kind of got a little bit of stink on me, I really leaned towards the like more alternative stuff. But I think probably as far back to my like first recordings, it's probably just like on the strange side of things. I was like trying to do something different, I guess.
You know, it's funny too, because like I being somebody who came up like I loved all like the Primo and like I said, a lot of the mainstream stuff too, like Dre and Outkast and stuff. But like as a young adult, I got more into like underground hip hop and like a lot of like mainstream acts like Lil Wayne and Ludacris and stuff like that. I would just be like, that's all crap. Like I don't want to hear any of that stuff. And then as I got older, I would hear like these random like remixes. Like I forget who, somebody did some Ludacris album and they remixed it with like a Jackson 5 album or something like that. And I listened to it and I was like, yeah, that's actually pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I want to listen to like a Ludacris album on its own type thing. You know what I mean? But like, there's just all these mainstream artists that I feel like I've just kind of shit on as an adult, because I'm just like, I don't want to listen to like any of that kind of stuff. And I feel like sometimes we're just kind of like trained, like you said, to kind of think of it one way or the other and then there can't be a back and forth, I guess, you know?
Yeah. And it's kind of a shame. That's sort of similar to my experience, you know, like I got really just like anti-mainstream about it, you know, like that, like it was this weird virtuous thing that like makes you more artistic or whatever it is. But I don't know. I look back at that and think it's really silly. I mean, a lot of that stuff is really lame. What's happening in the, you know, super mainstream, but I think that it's probably a really good idea to just be a little more open-minded than that, because I don't know, enjoy your life, you know.
I think the most cringeworthy thing I did, like related to talking about this kind of stuff, is like in the early 2000s, whenever anybody, like usually from hardcore and punk, they would know that I like rap and hip-hop, and they'd be like, oh, Josh, you like rap? And I'd be like, no, I like hip-hop. You know what I mean? Like I would like correct them and be like, I don't listen to that mainstream rap crap or whatever. And I go back to a lot of it now. You go back to it now though, and you're like, that's, some of that shit is so classic. And I feel like, you know, now I'm at my age now where like I'm not going out there looking for a lot of the younger rappers. I'm not going to lie, but like, if one comes across my radar and I like them, I obviously listen to them, you know. I don't care at this point, like, cause I don't even know what is or what isn't mainstream, like how it's decided at this point. Like, I know who the really popular rappers are, obviously, because like they talk about them on all the platforms and stuff, you know, but like, I probably couldn't pick a.
It's interesting because, you know, we're all on the same platform now. I don't know if the underground really exists, you know. My music's on the same platform as like Taylor Swift's or whatever, you know. Obviously she has a few more listeners than I do, but yeah, so I do feel that way. I think that that's like a industry made up thing, you know, like that really has nothing to do with music or musicians, you know, like iTunes made that up. They just need to know how to sell shit. And I think that's like a really good way for them to sell stuff, is to say that like this is an alternative to that. If you want to have this as part of your identity, you should go this way, you know.
Yeah, and it seems like, especially with social media and the whole, like, I'm not shitting on people that have tattoos, but like with tattoo culture and stuff, like it seems like everybody's been trying to be alternative for as long as I can remember now. And I've, like you're saying, like placing an alternative tag on something, and like people are like immediately like, oh, and it's underground, you know, like, like sign me up, you know? So
yeah, everything that with like SoundScan related, as far as my music goes, has the tag alternative rap on it. Which, you know, I'm fine. I don't have any negative feelings about it, but I certainly didn't ask for it to be there.
Yeah. So what, like, I guess you said you started playing shows like when you were like 18, like, did you start like, were you like regularly playing shows at that point, or was it just kind of like sporadic, or like how did that all like come together?
Yeah. You know, once it started, it was kind of just like, you know, every other weekend forever. And I eventually, you know, got to tour a little bit. And I went to Europe a couple times. Haven't really been out west much. I played South by Southwest recently. But yeah, I've seen a good chunk of United States thanks to rap music.
Has it all been like tours, like independent, like on your own, or do you ever like jump on like legs of like other like artist tours and stuff, or just like you know what I mean?
Mostly the latter, yeah. Most of the trips I've taken, I've been like an opener for another artist or another group.
Yeah.
Or DJ.
And I know obviously that there's a connection with Benny Beyond, but like what other local like rappers have you been connected to like in the 15 or 20 years that you've been involved with all this, I guess?
At the beginning, I was pretty close with and opening for Mackie a lot. He kind of just decided he liked what I did and just started having me play up top at most of his gigs. And that was really big for me. That's kind of how I got to know venues and got to play in certain places and got a little bit more familiar with the scenes, other DJs and stuff. It's kind of a small circuit, I would say. It's even smaller now, but back then it was like, you know, you play a couple shows, you might meet everybody.
And, I mean, there's more like well-known, I guess, like people from our city that are known like nationwide now, but like coming up, like for me, like Hassan would have been the one you would have wanted to be connected to, you know what I mean? So it's pretty cool that you had that connection pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah, it was a pretty huge, co-sign at the time. It still is, you know?
I just remember like I worked at Midtown in like 2000 and he worked there too. And I remember I'd recognize him from there, but I would go to like you're referring to open mic nights before, and I would go to some of those, and he was always be like just like the most ridiculous, you know what I mean? Like you'd be waiting to see like what he had to say that night type thing, you know? And
so. Yeah, still the best rap performer I've ever seen. Always all improvised too. I've yet to see anyone put on a show like that.
Oh, that's really cool. And while checking out your most recent like full album, Until You Run Out of Cake Today, I was telling my girlfriend in the car, I was like, and I'm going to nerd out for a second on this too. So around like 2004, maybe 2005, I kind of fell off hardcore and punk and didn't listen to it as exclusively. And I pretty much just listened to hip hop for those couple years. And I would just look around on like undergroundhiphop.com, like all these sites, OK Player, that would talking about like albums and shit. And I come across this Foreign Exchange Connected. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm reading about it. I'm like, yo, because at the time, like, this is 20 years ago or so, like, not now with social media and like what you and I are doing right now, having a group from North Carolina connect with a producer from Holland would be nothing. You know what I mean? Even 20 years ago, they still had email and stuff. But to me, I'm like, this is so crazy that they connected with this foreign producer. And I bought that CD. And like, I don't have tons of friends in the hip hop community. So I've never once had a conversation with anybody that knew about that CD. Like, I'm sure Benny knows about it. I'm sure like a couple of my friends know about it, but like, I've never sat down and been like, yo, this Connected CD. Cause for me, like as a hip hop fan, it's like above and beyond like a lot of other releases, you know, like I can't think like sonically, there's not much else it sounds like the first couple ones they did, you know what I mean? Like, So again, I know I'm nerding out on this for a second, but when I saw he was on that track, I was like, holy shit, that's so cool that you have a connection with these dudes. And like, I don't
Are
know
you
how that all
to Vaughn.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does the opening tune on that record. Huh?
I think it was it might've been the third or fourth track, but either way he's on there. Yeah. He's on there. And I saw the name Vaughn P and I was like, holy shit. Like that's, you know what I mean? That again, like you're familiar with Foreign Exchange, obviously, right? Or.
Oh yeah. In fact, that's really cool that you bring up that very brief, but important era in like, the social medias, because I do know that the first Foreign Exchange record is all thanks to the OK Player forum and all those guys kind of just like by happenstance talking to each other on there about music, you know. That's a great record. I got that when it came out, and I'm just as surprised as you are that that I get to make music with Bond sometimes.
Like I said, that one, and I forget what the second one, or Leave It All Behind. Like I remember, like, I don't remember every single trip to the record store for buying CDs, but like I remember buying like those two CDs specifically for whatever reason. Like I still, like I didn't listen to them before this interview, but like I was just like, I was like telling my girlfriend, I was like, yeah, Vaughn P, the veggie you can't eat. Like, I'm going to tell this dude the line from Foreign Exchange. Like, it's so, you know what I mean? So like, have you connected with a lot of other rappers that like people like me would like nerd out on and stuff? Or is that like one, cause I saw like Homeboy Sandman's on there too, which I'm familiar with him too, obviously. And,
I've got to do some cool stuff. I've known Sandman for a while. We've done a lot of stuff together. Billy Woods from Arm & Hammer is on my most recent record. He's kind of exploding right now. I don't know. I'm sure there are. I don't really think about this stuff in that way, you know. It's kind of like every song is like has its own life, you know. When you're working on a song, it's like the first and last song you ever made. I don't know, that's kind of how I feel about it. But if I like sat down and looked at all the stuff I did, I probably have some cool names to drop.
So like when you're putting albums together, I guess, or even like EPs or singles, like do you think like, oh, this could be good for this person or that person? Or is it all just kind of sometimes you just get lucky and someone wants to do a feature? Or
sometimes I'll have someone in mind when I like in the early stages. Sometimes I'll decide I don't have anything else to say, but the song doesn't feel done, so maybe maybe I'll have someone in mind during that stage. It's really cool that like at this point in my music life, most people that I reach out to will probably be on board with it.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It seems like how accessible like a lot of rappers seem to be too, because I'll hear in interviews like a lot of them will just say like, yeah, I'll do a feature. And then sometimes like with like even like bigger rappers will just say like what city they're in and that they're willing to do features like that week. And I'm just like, growing up, I can't imagine that. Like, you know what I mean? Like it would have been like, how would you even found out about that? You know, it's just so crazy that everything's so accessible now. Like, again, going back to social media, you know, it's if used the right way, I guess, you know.
I guess that's more of like the transactional way to do it. I don't know. Even if it was like one of my favorites, I don't know that I would hop on the like, hey, I'm open to doing features right now. Cause I see that a lot And I never see that and think, oh, I should take advantage of that because I know it'll be more transactional than personal, you know? And that's just like, that's not very appealing to me. I'm sure there will be exceptions.
Yeah. I'm sure they probably wouldn't exactly have the track in mind too when they're giving you the feature. It's just like, here's like however many bars you want or whatever, you know what I mean? Maybe they'll give you a theme if you ask for it or whatever, you know, but, so I know you played, was that Flower City Station you said you were playing a couple weeks ago you were rehearsing for, or was that somewhere else?
That was, that show happened last Thursday. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Was that, do you do like headliners when you play, or do you have like other, are you play with like other ones or?
Very rarely will I headline a gig. That gig was my friend Chris. His band is called it's just his initials, CPDP. He made an instrumental record which is called Faces in the Underpainting, and he got a band together to like cover all the music, and he had some vocalists come in and like add some words to the music. And my buddy Gary Lamar, who he's a good friend of mine and former bandmate. He was DJing and he said some raps too.
Anything else coming up with like shows and stuff? Anything else planned or like I don't know how often you usually like play and stuff?
Yeah, I'm actually I'm opening for the band Subsoil at Photo City Improv on June 2nd, which I believe is a week from tomorrow.
I think that'll probably be right around the time this episode airs. We're recording two tonight, so I don't know which way Greg plans to air them or whatever. So it's all in your hands, Greg.
Greg, don't you fuck this up for me.
That's cool. It's Subsoil still kicking it too. Obviously, that's a familiar name. I would say like 2008, 2009. I saw them a few times, and they're one of those bands that like they can get down with like all sorts of different like styles of artists, you know what I mean? Because I feel like I saw them with like maybe even like an emo band or something when I saw them at like Dublin or something, you know what I mean? So
yeah, anywhere there's music happening, they'll get on the bill and make something happen. Yeah, they've been around for a really long time. In fact, my first ever rap show in Rochester, they were headlining.
And that would have been, yeah, that's about the era that I'm talking about too, because that's when I first caught wind of those guys. I definitely saw them at Dublin a few times, and I feel like there was some weird like late night fire, like bonfire type thing or something, but I might be mixing. Those couple of years were kind of cloudy, like my late 20s were, you know,
that sounds like their vibe.
Yeah. So what current rappers are you fucking with? Like, what would you recommend to people, I guess?
Oh man, there's so many. Open Mike Eagle is really excellent. He's from Chicago originally. I think he's an LA guy now. Aesop Rock still makes records, like one a year, and they're always excellent. Black Thought from the Roots is like finally doing cool stuff as a solo act, and it's like, I don't know, that's all I wanted, you know, a kid like being super excited about the Roots was a Black Dog solo record, and now he has like seven, and they all came out in the last like 5 years. I don't know. A Bus Driver is my favorite MC. He just put out a new record. Arm & Hammer, definitely. Billy Woods and Elucid, both New York guys. Really interesting writers, really, really, like ballsy music as far as the beats go, you know.
There's Black Thought has one of my favorite verses on it's the second Dilated People's record, and it's like Black Thought, and I think it's just Black Thought and Dilated People's, I could be wrong. It's like one of the last songs on that album.
I remember that song.
Yeah, that Dilated was one of my favorites in the early 2000s. So I had that on heavy rotation, because we saw them in like Jurassic 5 and on one show. And I feel like Jurassic 5 and Black Star played, or not Black Star, Blackalicious played at RIT. I don't know what year that was, early 2000s maybe. So
That's excellent. So much cool stuff came out of the LA underground. Like Project Bloat and Freestyle Fellowship, that whole era, and then you get your Jurassic 5 and all that other cool stuff. Farside.
Yeah, no, California was definitely some of my favorite stuff too. So what else you got coming up? I guess anything else planned for like recordings, or I know you just did what that John Kruk mullet, that single came out a few months back, right? Like that was like November, mm-hmm. looked like on Bandcamp.
Yeah, so the Kruk mullet song is gonna be from a record with a duo that I'm in called Regular Henry. It's myself and my buddy Mike from Milwaukee, goes by Plain Old Mike, and we're putting a record out on Hipknot Records, and after that I'm doing an LP with the same label, all produced by Von P. So that's what I'm working on right now, writing for.
And yeah, and do you make a lot of your own? Do you do a lot of the production yourself too? Like, do you make a lot of beats yourself too?
Yeah, I produced about half of Until You Run Out of Cake. The rest of it is Mike from Regular Henry. And my previous three albums, I produced all on my own. I haven't really been making beats lately. So I've been making beats for about as long as I've been rapping. It's fun to do both. You feel really accomplished, like making a record from top to bottom all by yourself, but it is really nice to work with producers, you know, who get to focus on one thing, then you get to focus on one thing. I think it usually results in something higher quality.
Now, I'm somebody who's like kind of like control crazy or whatever. Like, so when you go from like producing the whole track and doing it all yourself to having somebody else produce it, are there ever any times you're like, oh, I kind of would have liked to have had this tweaked a little differently or that, or is it like just kind of go with the flow at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. But luckily Mike's very patient, and I think that's why we have been able to be so productive in the past couple of years, because he's always open to how I feel about stuff. And I'm not like, you know, a control freak by any means, but I just like have a very particular feeling about certain stuff. If it doesn't feel right, I'll never sleep again until it's fixed.
And I should have asked you this in the beginning, but it just occurred to me now when we were talking about you like rapping and doing the beats like around the same time, learning both, were you completely self-taught, or did you have anybody that you could like go to for advice when you were first learning all this stuff?
I don't think anyone really taught me anything. I had like Acid and Fruity Loops and Cakewalk and all that kind of shit, all the stuff you can get for free, you know, and I kind of just like messed around with it until it started to make sense. And then like the YouTube era came along with like a lot of tutorials and stuff, and I was really surprised that I was able to like kind of figure a lot of that stuff out before really actually knowing how it's supposed to be done, you know. But it is interesting that like all of the DAWs, you know, like all that software, everyone kind of has their own particular way to do it. And I think that's because it was just, you know, a bunch of idiot kids in their bedrooms, like torrenting the software and just winging it, you know.
I think we have about 15 or 20 minutes left before we're probably going to try and start this other interview. I have most of my questions covered. Like I told you before, one topic that I do have that we could go over a little bit, if you're at all interested, is like current events, especially in Rochester. There's been some kind of crazy stuff happening in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So like I actually just got interviewed for another podcast the other day. And one thing that I will say that I was telling them on the podcast, that I'm glad not to really have to talk about that much anymore. And it's not from like a weird, like, anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist angle, because I'm not one of those people, but like I used to open every episode of this podcast in 2020 like asking people like how COVID was affecting them and this and that about COVID, and I'm just like, it feels like a 100-pound monkey is just like off my back now because I don't have to ask. guess that much about COVID anymore. So right. I'm more just putting that out there that, like, I know it's not completely over. We're not totally out of the woods, but I'm glad that it's not like the main topic of discussion now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's because other bad shit has happened in the last couple of years, or like there's other things we're worried about, but it just seems like, and I saw that they were like making COVID, I forget what it said with the news yesterday, they're not going to make it like a required thing to be vaccinated now or something like that. And it's okay. Just like, it seems crazy that like that's like so far in the past now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it almost feels like it didn't even happen.
It's like it was a bad dream, you know?
Yeah, like a total fucking fever dream. I remember maybe at the beginning of that when it was clear that like, okay, all your shows are canceled for a while, being kind of relieved and excited about that, because you know, you play too many shows and stuff is not enjoyed as much. And then like, I don't know, like 17, 18 months went by before I got to play. And it was a real head trip doing that like almost every weekend for a bazillion years, and then all of a sudden it goes away forever.
Yeah.
Strange. Yeah.
The weird, like it's weird because I don't like, you're the first, like, I mean, I interviewed Benny too, but like, you're the first like exclusive like person from rap that I've interviewed, like, because Ben, we were talking about hardcore and stuff too, but like, yeah, when we were like pretty much all the bands in hardcore, like we were like, we don't know what's going to happen and what the scene's going to be like when things come back around. And like I'm saying, like, I don't know what it's like for rap because I haven't been to too many shows, but like with hardcore, everything's like on the up and up, and like there's so many new faces coming to shows, and like, going back to what I was saying before about not having an all ages venue in Rochester, unless you want to do like a park show or like an alternative thing, it's all like, hardcore is obviously a youth movement, and they're like, everybody I've interviewed from other cities is just telling me that it's all like new blood now, and there's like so many new kids that have popped up, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's happening at all with hip hop and rap at all, or if it's,
I mean, I think in our city in particular, I think that the alternative venues are kind of like more sought after than like booking the basement of a bar or whatever it is, you know. There's a, you know, the Mission in the South Wedge, which is like a repurposed Catholic church, I guess. I've played a few gigs there in the past couple of years, and it's really nice because, you know, anybody could be there, kids or whatever, like really kind of a warm, welcoming environment. There's like the Yards and the Public Market, which I'm sure you know, it's just like an art space. There's the UUU art space on
we had a couple Street. Shows there.
Yeah stuff like that. It's really nice because you know, people that attend those shows, they're a little more intentional about being there and listening versus playing, you know, at a place where people are just going to be out anyway. And you may just be interrupting their night out versus them wanting to come see you do your art, you know?
I never thought about it like that before, the way you just articulated it there, that you could be interrupting somebody's bar stool night or whatever, just wanting to sit there and shoot the shit. And now they're hearing, in your case, some rap, or in our case, some loud, annoying hardcore. But like the thing, I was more asking about like if there's new blood, like in your scene too, but like, I just want to say too, like, with you talking about like alternative venues, my only concern with like booking like hardcore at like different spaces like that is, and again, I haven't really tried yet. Like, I know UU's been cool, but like in the past, when we would go to VFW halls and churches, sometimes two or three shows, but a lot of times like you do one show there and they'd see like what was going to happen, and they'd be like, all right, we don't want kids like moshing and, you know, whatnot. So we're not going to have any more shows here. Like, UU is cool with that. And like, obviously a lodge would be fine, you know? So, but like, have you seen, like, I guess you're talking about like if people intentionally go to like an alternative venue, they're going to be there for the show. But like, have you seen like any like new crop of like people in the community, or is it like a lot of the same?
New talent?
No, just new fans and just like the, like new people, like just coming to the shows and stuff. You know what I mean? Like that you hadn't seen before, I guess.
Yes, but it's strange because, I kind of broke away from the like straight ahead rap scene in Rochester a few years ago. I had a band, like a piano trio, that would play my music, and like, so I got to be around different music scenes, like, you know, the Eastman Kids and the probably some of the punk kids and the singer-songwriter groups, you know. So a lot of people that may come out to see me, they're not even like super rap savvy crowds, you know. They're just, I don't know, maybe they saw me at one of those gigs or heard through word of mouth through non-rap musicians, you know. But yeah, new people pop up all the time. It's really nice to meet people at shows. I'm always surprised at the conversations I get to have with people. You know, it's always like really unassuming and out of nowhere for me.
And then I guess the other, aside from the cops kind of being assholes and such, the other real current events in the last few years, especially recently, is I guess you could relate it to cops if you really wanted to. I think it might be a different thing, but like just the crime, and especially like the Kia TikTok, which I never realized they're actually called the Kia Boys. Like, did you know that?
Oh yeah,
I didn't know that until recently. Like somebody tagged them in a thing, and I was like, oh shit, that's what they're called. Like when I remember my freaking girlfriend was first telling me about this in early January, I was like, this can't be a real thing. Like people are just going around, and it's like every week it's been like venues have gotten like bashed into. Like I live by like Dewey and Ridge, and like there's even buildings around here that are boarded up, and like a pawn shop, like the bricks are like pushed in, and I'm like, did a car drive into that? Like that's like, you just wonder what's going on every night now. It's so crazy, you know?
Yeah. I just got my Kia back. They tried to steal it like 4 months ago. So it was all banged up and had to sit and wait for repairs for about 4 months. Wow. And it's a lease, so I can't get out of it. So yeah, I've been a victim of the aforementioned Kia Boys.
That is so crazy. I just can't believe that. Like, I could see like them making something that easy to break into in like the 70s or 80s, but like it's the 2020s now. Like my girlfriend's like, they're cheap cars, so that's why. But I'm like, I still feel like they should have been some sort of like, I don't do that kind of work, and I never have and probably never will, but I'm just like, how could you not have, like, how would they not have known this beforehand, you know? And it was already happening in other cities too, you know? It's,
yeah,
just crazy.
I believe it started in Milwaukee, believe it or not.
Oh, that's crazy. Because I saw there were several cities that are suing, like, Kia. Like, we're among the cities that are now suing Kia. So, I don't know how that works. I'm guessing East Person will probably get, like, $50 after, like, because there's going to be so many people involved with it or whatever, you know what I mean? It's...
Yeah, that's how those civil suits work. Like, you'll get a letter saying you're entitled to something, and then they cut you a check for, like, 30 cents, and then it's all over. But, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. It's so dumb because you know, I want to go do stuff. I want to, like, be able to go play shows and not have to Uber there because some, like, little asshole is going to break into my car or whatever.
Yeah, and I don't drive either. And like, if I want to go to like the Bug Jar, I'll have to either like catch a bus or walk, or like you're saying, catch an Uber. And I'm like, these shows run so late. Like, I feel kind of like, I'm not trying to sound like a pussy, you know what I mean? But like, I live in a pretty like sketchy area as it is, and I'm like, I don't really want to be going home at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, who knows what's lurking around now? Because there's just so many random shootings lately. You know what I mean? Like, I was walking my kids home from the Seneca Park Zoo like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and literally like right where we walked by, like 15 minutes later, like three people got shot on the corner of Lake and Ridge. You know what I mean? I was like, my girlfriend picked us up like right there. You know what I mean? I was just like,
it
happens everywhere now. It's just insane, you know?
Yeah, I used to live over there by Lake and Ridge on Fairview Heights, and that's a fine neighborhood, I guess, but I do remember working late sometimes, coming home being like, oh man, I'm gonna have to like run from my car into my apartment. That stinks.
We've lived because I most of my life lived downtown, like Monroe Ave area, and we've lived here since like 2011, and like it's always been kind of suspect, but like I worked at the stadium for a couple years, like Frontier, and I would walk like legit walk to and from the stadium down like either Dewey or side streets at night, like 5-6 years ago, and didn't feel unsafe doing that, you know? But now I definitely wouldn't, like even during the day, I probably wouldn't walk down those streets. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, things just seem so different now. Like there's, or maybe I'm just paying more attention because I have kids too, you know? And I'm like, I'm not going to walk my kids down that street now, you know?
Yeah, that could be a factor. I think what's crazy is that, you know, there's always been crime, obviously, but it just seems more and more random. which is like frightening because that's just chaos, you know.
Yeah,
no point or anything, you know.
Yeah, and that's what makes me nervous because I'm like, some of these, like you can usually sometimes kind of tell when things are like premeditated or whatever, but sometimes it really does just seem like somebody was just like just shot a gun into the air or like shot at people randomly, like for no reason, you know. And I'm like, I'm not going to be walking my kids to the Strong Museum and, you know what I mean? Like, have to like shield them or whatever. Like, this, I don't want to be so extreme about it, you know what I mean? But it's like the neighborhood we live in. It's like my girlfriend's already said it. She's like, you're not walking them that way this year. And I'm trying to think of like alternative routes that I could take around the city to walk them places, mm-hmm. you know. And it's, I guess I have to, the answer is to get my license again, you know, and just not drive a Kia, obviously.
Yeah, don't, if you get that license back, don't invest in a Hyundai or Kia.
So I think that's pretty much most of the stuff I would have had to have asked. Is there anything else that you'd want to drop in the interview or anything you want to promote as far as stuff you've been working on for the last year or two?
I think we've pretty much covered it because I mentioned two records in the events. Hopefully it'll time out to where maybe people might hear it in time to go see the thing.
That's Friday that you're doing the show with them?
The Subsoil gig is June 2nd. I believe it's next Friday. Yeah.
I'll put a note into Greg after we do this to see if we can get this up in time. Okay. Yeah, I guess I'll talk to you after to see if you want to like throw a track on the episode or something. We usually throw like a hardcore song on the episode, but I feel like it'd be kind of weird to put like a hardcore punk song on this episode because there might be people that don't listen to hardcore as much on this one. But
I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, we're down to do it, obviously. You know, we usually have a few songs in the cut. And like I said, in the beginning, I have a podcast where I just play like hardcore music now. So I have access to lots of new songs, obviously. So yeah, well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know, peeling back the curtain, that you and I kind of had a little tough time getting this all set up and everything, but I'm glad we were finally able to get it all together and whatnot.
Yeah, me too. That was a pretty intense game of a podcast phone tag.
Yeah, well, I was telling my girlfriend, I was like, man, I know I want to start interviewing more rappers, but is everyone going to be like, we have to set up a different date because I can't do it for this reason, you can't do it for that reason, and then we're both just like, Thursday's easier type thing. Like,
you know? I have a feeling that I'll be the easiest rapper you
I think so.
Plan for interviewing, you know.
I think so too, honestly. So I guess it will be like 10 or 12 reschedules with the next one.
It's all downhill from here.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this, man. Anything else you want to add or anything? Or?
How do you know Ben?
Ben played in a band called Like Wolves. I don't know if you knew him back then. They're like a punk hardcore band. And okay. I was still booking shows sporadically back then. And I put them on like two or three shows here and there. And then we found out that we both like basketball and hip hop. And up until recently, like since I started this podcast, I don't think Ben and I had really ever really talked about hardcore. I think we mainly have talked about like mostly basketball and some hip hop. And now that I do this podcast and like I'm booking shows again, I'll send him occasionally like Bandcamp links to bands that I've heard. But I think when you're around like, cause I love hardcore music, but like being around it so much and doing a podcast on it, which I wasn't doing that then, but like booking shows and spending so much time on it, it's like, I kind of like talking to people about other stuff. You know what I mean? Like once you find out someone's into other stuff, I'm sure it's probably the same for you sometimes too. Like somebody like wants to talk to you about rap, you're like, man, what else are you into? You know?
Yeah, no, definitely like not baseball and comic books and stuff like that are a lot more interesting to talk about than myself, I guess.
Yeah. Is that how you guys know each other too, from the music scene, or you and Ben?
Yeah. Ben, I think when Ben like first started playing rap music, one of his first gigs, I happened to be on that gig too, and we met, kind of became fast friends. He's like one of my closest buds now. We get together like a couple times a month, and watch baseball. Hey, come on. Yeah, he's like a really great dude.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, as much as him and I have talked about basketball, I don't think I've ever brought up baseball. And I'm obviously wearing the shirt from the last time my boys won, whether you want to put an asterisk next to it or not, because it was COVID shortened season. Like some Mets douchebag Mets fans. Sorry if you are a Mets fan.
No.
One of my best friends is a Mets fan. He always, every time I bring up the 2020, he always texts back just a little asterisk or whatever, you know, and I'm just like, you know, so it's all in good, clean fun, obviously, but, you know. So, I appreciate you taking the time to do this tonight, though, man. Like I said, I'll put the note in for Greg and try to get this out in time for the gig next week so we can get the promotion out for it and stuff.
Okay, man. Sorry.
What kind of dog is that?
Yeah, I appreciate you, too. I don't know.
A big dog?
Terrier mix. No, she's a little taking up a lot of space.
Yeah, it's all good. I don't know if you do like the social media thing, but I'll tag you on there and stuff too. And because we usually promote the stuff on our Instagram, and I don't really fuck with social medias quite as much, but
yeah, me neither. My Instagram is Old Mosey Pants.
I think I can remember that, or I'll just look up. Okay. I'm sure if I look up your name, I'll find it too.
It'll come up.
Cool. All right, cool, man. I appreciate you taking the time to do this tonight. Like I said, I'll shoot you a text when I talk to Greg, when he thinks he's going to be able to get this out for us and stuff.
Okay, man. Cool. I appreciate you too.
The Hardcore Archive Podcast is Josh Lyons and Greg Benoit with creative support from Rob Antonucci.
This podcast is a product of the Rochester Hardcore community. Theme song provided by Stand Fast.
Visit Hardcore Archive Podcast on Linktree to listen to past episodes.
Follow Hardcore Archive Podcast and Enterprise Hardcore Podcast on Instagram for updates.
If you have an idea for an episode or would like to have your band's music featured during the closing credits, please contact us at hardcorearchivepodcast@gmail.com.
During the World Series, the Philadelphia Phillies have been accused of being unshaven, overweight, long-haired, dumb slobs. Here now to answer those charges is Phillies first baseman, John Kruk. John?
You ought to keep the word equips, I need some work to flip. Heard every zombie sleeping on me only turns in Swiss. Was sick of working for rent, so I learned to circumvent and claim the space in the shade for our lunar eclipse. Look who it is, an upsurging out of the murk and mist. I'll kick a verse all the kitties purring like Eartha Kitt. Slick finger wave, insinuating perfect pitch. Pull out the Michael Jack, powder blue and burgundy Schmidt. So bow, curtsy and dip while I get this bourbon a sip. A little magic and myth, little suburban abyss. I'll be absurd, remiss to forget to mention I'm indifferent to the furthest extent and kick up dirt when I split. I won't invest in what's commercially hip. I got a bone to pick with openers at local events. Got an imploded sense of onus in my vocal intent, and so will credit my temper while I openly vent. Damn, developmentally stunted for Peter Pan's sake. In need of ram space and Uncle Buck pancakes. Muddied up amenities and public pool band-aids. Pineapple concentrate and complicated handshakes. Lieutenant Dan legs and pizzeria window glass. Used to have a crush on Lauren Hill and Sister Act. Crocker mullet collectible out the blister pack. Reheated spiral Mac, deleted scenes from Spinal Tap. So think well of me and tell the press to project me in high fidelity, or else I might address the rest of y'all as open sesame. Might accidentally shoot your pinky toe like Della Reese, and by the time you read this I'll be melting on a Belgian beach. Sipping wit from out of falcon's beak, sun seared like uncured deli meats. Filet-O fish, belly with a crang in it. Little pinch of basil, little ladle sip. A little hidden figure from a sacred ancient pagan myth. Not claiming I'm the shit, but if the apron fits. Lately I've been on so many takers tip. You and whoever you came with should come and get your table flipped. Could be a gentleman's dozen, could be a baker's six. Look up in the space and shake a naked fist and thank you for your patronage. This is Mo and Mike's undebated greatest hits. So when you exit, you'll be gifted a complimentary tape or disc.
You see what happens, Larry? See what happens when you step in the arena, then treat it like it's a pageant. Miasma, a zero thermic wrap to bask in. Thirsty rappers got sand flowing through their plasma. Grandmas, come to our show. Read the captions. Pomeranian, beast of burden, feast or famine. Release the Kraken, unleash the chupacabra. I'm trick-or-treating with 16 doom imposters. Check the roster, most woods and desmatic. I sent away for a hedgehog with a cleft palate. Last meal was dipping dots and chef salad. TikTok, I'd rather fake tan on the red planet. With Pelosi, Black Medallion, and Koofy. Spirit animals, Mary Mallon and Snoopy. My life coach and teacher is Cool Keith. I jumped the shark without creasing my dookies. I'm John Kruk, I'm Kirby Puckett, I'm Lenny D. I'm Tony Gwynn, I'm Pete Rose, I'm Dennis E. I'm Nolan Ryan on the wrong side of 46. I make it work, but I was not really built for this. I'm John Kruk, I'm Kirby Puckett, I'm Lenny D.
I'm Tony Gwynn, I'm Pete Rose, I'm Dennis E. I'm Nolan Ryan on the wrong side of 46. I made it work, but really, I wasn't built for this.